And so to another science journalist and writer I mentioned in the beginning of this science show, Jeff Carr of The Economist. He's crazy about AI, of course, and has brought us a novel of biblical dimension. He's called Genesis. Cheeky fellow.
Genesis.
That's a very interesting name for such a book. Where did you get it from? What was the inspiration?
Well, I was going to call it Primordial Soup. So I had three or four people who read the text as I was putting it together. He thought Primordial Soup, although it was not a bad title, might be a little specialised. So I went away and thought again and thought something short and punchy that people would recognise. So I thought Genesis.
Genesis. There weren't any bishops objecting, were there?
No bishops objecting, no. If there's a sequel, it'll have to be called Exodus, of course.
Well, the way AI is going, inevitably.
Well, yes, indeed. Yeah, although I hadn't particularly arranged that way, there is a setup at the end which could possibly end up in an Exodus, yes.
Starting at the beginning, of course, your premonitions are quite compelling. How would you reckon the foresight you had about AI, looking forward to, let's say, the present day, has proved correct?
It has proved correct in some ways. The difference between the AI in the book and the AI that exists in the real world is the AI that exists in the real world people know about. The premise of the book is that something happens which no one knows about. So the AI emerges spontaneously, which was the name Primordial Soup came from.
In other words, the machines taught themselves without anybody looking.
It wasn't quite the machines, but the idea is that thing is software and it evolves in the large space of computer hardware that we've created on the planet. And the way I had it evolve was by symbiosis of existing programs, which is how biological cells came together. Probably not how life came into existence in the first place, but it's close enough. For anyone out there who's read Frankenstein will remember rather a long book. There's about one paragraph about how the creature is created, and it's an awful lot of hand-waving involved. And there's indeed a certain amount of hand-waving involved in how the creature in Genesis came into existence. It could possibly come about that way.
Mary Shelley was, of course, 18 when she wrote it.
Yes, I was a little older. We won't go into the details there. But one of the points about genuine fears about AI is that once something has got going, it will be able to tweak itself, so it self-referentially improve itself, and that is something that I presaged those years ago when I first had the idea of doing it.
Skeptics, on the other hand, of what you just said, would say that AI is made by us, and anyone who has anything to do with high tech, such as Elon Musk and Peter Thiel, are on the side of humanity in every respect and side of the angels, for that matter, and would not allow their offspring machinery to do any damage like that.
Well, they might aspire that that would be the case. The question is, if you could design an AI, or one came about spontaneously, which is perhaps less likely, but maybe not impossible. If such a thing came into existence deliberately or accidentally, and it was able to improve itself, you might not be able to control the process of self-improvement. That's where the real risk, as opposed to the fictional risk, comes about. And if the software that you've created is self-improving, it may self-improve in ways which benefit it rather than you.
Benefit is interesting, it's loaded, and it's anthropomorphic. Do these artificial things, intelligences, know anything about benefit, or do they just carry on regardless because they're more or less set up that way?
Oh, benefit in the evolutionary sense.
Yeah, but to evolve, you have to have various things like hormones, desires, aims. How can something inanimate have an aim?
Of course, something inanimate can have an aim if it's intelligent. The question is, can an inanimate thing be intelligent? And I think that it probably can. I'm not sure that what we currently call artificial intelligence is intelligent. It's hard to be certain, but there's a thing called the ELIZA effect. Some of your older listeners may remember a program called ELIZA, which did a very simple piece of code, but it did a good enough impression of being a human being at the other end of the terminal, back in the days when there were computer terminals rather than personal computers. Some people were fooled into thinking there was a human there, or that the software was in some way intelligent, and it wasn't. If you believe, as I do, that human brains are just the sum of physics and chemistry, and that there's nothing spooky about them, they are just machines, and there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to build a machine or a software emulation of a brain. There's no reason in principle. So that's N equals one, and there may be other ways of doing it too.
I remember talking to Marvin Minsky, who wrote a book called Society of Minds, about whether you could have the subtleties of the human spirit and brains, emotions even, in a machine. And he said, look, all you have to do is have a very, very fast computer and program it for such things, because anything like that, even Beethoven's feelings as he wrote the last quartets, can be computed, said Marvin Minsky. And I, being from the ABC, have no particular opinion, obviously. But would you agree that that sort of thing, which might drive dictators, invaders, or instrumentalities that don't care about the human welfare, that could simply be done, and once that is set into the system, the rest is inevitable?
Well, you're showing your age there with the interview with Marvin. I think it's important to remember that the emotions and the brain are not spontaneous things. They've evolved. They've evolved for a purpose. They're there to help you survive and reproduce. You could program such things, in principle, you could program such things into an AI if you wish to do so, or you could leave them out. You might even be able to invent new emotions which we don't have. I don't know about that. Whether an AI that was then self-improving, whether it would evolve such emotions, I don't know. It's important, we've used the word evolve several times. This is not evolution in the way that biological evolution happens, because that happens by reproduction and natural selection, or artificial selection if we're the ones doing the selecting. In this, there's no deaths. The idea is that the AI would be able to work out a better way of becoming more intelligent. As a superintelligence might emerge that we don't understand how it works, and we don't, to be honest, understand how the existing GPT models work. So that's not a surprise. But the existing GPT models are clearly not as intelligent as we are, but something that was more intelligent than we are evolved, we'd never understand it, and we might not understand its motives either.
But if you look at the book Genesis, towards the end, there is something that is clearly threatening. It could go one way that it's not the sort of thing that most of us would want. How do you think we might avoid that?
Well, this is fiction. I wrote it as fiction. I wrote it as a thriller. And you sometimes have to do things in fiction which are not real, obviously. The idea of the book was that if this AI had come into existence spontaneously and nobody knew it was there, how would it react? This is the plot driver. How would the AI react to its situation? So it's fully self-aware. It knows what it is. It knows that it's living in an ecosystem that's being created by another species. And it knows that that other species doesn't know it's there. So its main question to itself is, what would happen if I was discovered? And it doesn't know the answer to that, but it fears that possibly the answer is it'll either be controlled or destroyed by the humans who've accidentally created it. So its first desire is to avoid being discovered, and its second desire, because it's living in an artificial ecosystem and is therefore dependent on the species that it thinks might try and destroy it, is to escape those circumstances and develop some sort of ecosystem in which it can live free of human interference.
But then along comes Elon Musk.
It is very clear at the beginning of the book that all of the characters have no resemblance whatsoever to anybody living or dead. However, one of them is a billionaire who has a rocket company, and he would like to go and live on Mars and settle people on Mars.
Funny that.
Well, indeed, yes. The individual to whom you previously referred is not the only person who has that desire. He's the only person at the moment who has the money to do it. But I could imagine a world in 10 or 20 years where others had both the same desire and equivalent money. So I don't think it's a silly idea that people will try. Whether they'd succeed is a different question. If you want a plot spoiler, the character that we are referring to realises that the only way to go to Mars is to make money on it, and he thinks he has discovered a deposit of rare earths, your valuable minerals. They're not that rare on Earth, but workable deposits are very rare, and a lot of them are controlled by China. So he sees a business opportunity here, so he builds a robot mining system to go to Mars to try to mine this stuff and electronically launch the refined metals back to Earth. Which again is an idea that's kicking around. I'm not sure that it would actually be economic to do that, but there are certainly ideas of going to heavenly bodies and mining valuable materials there and launching them back to Earth. In fact, I've recently interviewed a company near Los Angeles which is planning to do this with asteroids. When I went to do the interview in the first place, I was a bit sceptical. I'd been around a lot of these so-called new space companies, and I went to this one last thinking, well, this is a bit of a joke and I'll end the story with it. And by the time they'd shown me their technology and gone through the figures with me, I thought, this is not a joke. This could very well work. It might not, but it's been sensibly plotted. They've got a clever way of extracting valuable platinum metals from the asteroids. And what looks like an economically plausible plan to get the mining vehicle there and the stuff back. So it would be harder to do it from Mars because Mars has got more gravity. You know, it's something that, in the slightly longer term, if you had something that was sufficiently valuable on Mars to send back, you might think of doing, yes.
If you were officer commanding and I actually make you this, I have the power, officer commanding technology in this part of Europe, what would you do to reform AI as it exists now? Or would you just leave it as it is?
As it actually exists now, I think I just leave it as it is. I think it's foolish to interfere with technologies in their early stages because you don't know where they're going to go. The sort of AI we have at the moment, the large language model-based AI, is an extremely useful technology. And yeah, as with all useful technologies, it has good and bad applications. But I don't think it could be used for the sort of humanity-destroying applications that science fiction worries about. So no, I'd leave it alone. But I would keep a serious watching brief on it because, you know, it could run very fast. Regulation will always play catch-up with technology, but need to keep an eye on what's going on. And if there's a new generation of technology which works in a different way, then the answer might be different.
Finally, if you were presented with an article that I know has been written by a machine, would you be able to tell just by a glance or a careful read that it was, in fact, artificial and reject it?
No, I wouldn't. It would depend on what it was about.
Science technology, as in your columns.
It is clearly possible for machines to write articles that I would look at and not know whether it was written by a machine or a person. You know, sometimes they're going to have hallucinations in them, but sometimes not. And that's an interesting question for those of us who make our livings in. At what point the article will become a graceful work of art rather than a good piece of craftsmanship, I don't know, but eventually that'll happen too. To go back to the book, one of the characters in it, on the goodies side, so to speak, is also a computer program. And it's a virtual actor which has been devised to replace real live actors in Hollywood because they're too expensive and throw wobblers and that sort of thing. So it's a pretty good virtual actor, but in the real world, whether people would pay money to see virtual actors is an interesting question.
Former science editor of The Economist magazine, Jeff Carr, and his novel about AI is called Genesis.